Good afternoon, everyone. You are all very welcome to the Audit Committee. Can everyone ensure their mobile phones are either turned off or switched to silent? The use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded, except where the committee is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. I would remind members of the committee of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. So I take it, members, that there's no interest to be declared today. So we'll go on to the first item, which is apologies. And I've got an apology today from Councillor Casey and Councillor Hannah and Michael Lipsett. Any other apologies? Councillor Sharvin.
And Marie Ward.
And Marie Ward. So we'll take those. And then, members, if we go on to item 3 of the agenda, which is the action sheet. And again, members, are members content that all the actions listed on the action sheet where it says that they have been actioned, are members happy to accept that the actions have been actioned and that they can be removed from the action sheet going forward? If I could have a proposer and seconder then for the action sheet. Thank you. And seconder, Councillor Trader. Thank you. And then that takes us on to item 4, which is the Corporate Risk Register. And Rena, you're going to take us through that.
Thank you, Chairman. Members, you'll see before you today the Corporate Risk Register. This was last reviewed by the senior management team in September. Number of minor changes made to it, really to update the actions. No new risks have been identified. We've also there in the cover report given you an update on the development of the risk management framework. You'll be aware that there was an internal audit review carried out in this area last year, one of the recommendations of which was to carry out a review and update of the policy. That's now been updated, and we're hoping to bring a new policy through to FPNR in October. You'll also see that we are still operating our quarterly assurance statement position, with the next assurance statements due now at the end of September, and the assistant directors and directors will be working away on that as we speak. Following then the introduction of the new policy, we're going to carry out some training to our CMT group, which is our assistant director grouping. So we're hoping to start that in October, and felt it was better to do that on the revised policy. And again, that's another recommendation which is coming out of last year's internal audit review. Don't propose to go through any of the risks in detail, but happy to answer any questions you may have. One item I would just bring to your attention is with regard to corporate risk number 5, failure to effectively manage waste. At the last audit committee, Joe Parks came along and gave you an update on where we are with regard to putting in place the recommendations of the waste internal audit report. Just like to bring to members' attention that we do have an audit being carried out today, actually, by the Northern Ireland DFI Central Licensing Office, which is part of VOSA, the Vehicle and Operating Services Agency. So basically, in layman's terms, this is the body that gives us our operator's license. They're carrying out an audit today, and we're one of a number of councils that they've decided to carry out an audit on. It's within the remit of this audit committee then to look at all externally conducted reports, so we hope to bring you back an audit report on that in due course. We haven't obviously got any outworkings of that audit, and therefore we haven't changed any risk profile at this stage. But obviously, once we see the findings of that, we will consider its impact on that corporate risk number 5. So, happy to take any questions, members.
Members, any questions, comments for Doreena? Doreena, I just have one question. The report refers to a draft version of the risk management framework. Is there any significant changes proposed?
There's no significant changes. What we've simplified it a little bit. It's quite a meaty document. Yeah. We've simplified it in order to make it a little bit more user-friendly. One of the recommendations coming out of the internal audit report was about defining our risk appetite a bit better, and that's, I suppose, the key change that we've made to it is further defining that. But nothing of real fundamental change in that regard.
So that will go to the October
SDNR, and hopefully then ratified by Council in early November.
Yeah, and then it'll be copied to the Audit Committee?
Bring that out to the next meeting.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for that. And just then on Risk 8, which is IT services, is there any work being done on cyber risks? You know, in light of obviously all the attacks that have happened?
We, our IT manager, at the time that there were a number of large scale cyber risks, our IT manager was carrying out a daily review looking through the log that our systems keep of any potential threats. Thankfully, we had nothing which really caused us any great concern. Similarly, the IT managers are all part of a group who share when one organisation has had a potential threat, they share that information between themselves, which allows the other organisations to, I suppose, get on the front foot with identifying that. So there was good teamwork across councils at that stage, and no real threats identified that actually impacted on us. Thankfully.
Okay, thanks for that, Doreena. We'll move on then to item 5, which is prompt payments. And Ken, you're going to take this item?
Yes, thank you, Chair. The report you have on page 24 sets out the prompt payment statistics for the quarter ended the 30th of June 2017. The next quarter due will be completed for those invoices from the 1st of July to the 30th of September. So it'll be very shortly with us, and that will be, you will get that report at the next meeting. The key issues are that the number of invoices paid within 10 days was 613, representing 9% of the invoices. The number of invoices paid within 30 days was 6,317, representing 88% of all invoices received. Paid outside that payment, that 30-day window, was 845 invoices, representing 12%, i.e. the difference between 88% and 100%. We would ask the committee to note the prompt payment statistics, and would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thanks for that, Ken. Just one point of clarification, which we got at the pre-meeting with the auditors, is that there is a target, 30-day target, and it's set at 95%, although the aspiration is to pay all invoices within 30 days, and so I think it would be worth maybe just referring to that, Ken, on the report, you know, whenever you're reporting next time round. And I suppose really from an audit committee perspective, in terms of 88%, whilst that is good and it certainly is an improvement on before, you know, I think every effort should be made to try and get that percentage up to 95% and above, if possible. Any other comments, members?
A couple of things. You're just puzzling me a wee bit about how your percentages are worked out. 88 and 12 and 9 to 109.
Plus the number within the 10 days is also the 30 days.
Right, okay. Yeah, okay. And then the outside of the 30-day period, do we know what length of time that's going on? You know, it's £3.3 million. Like if that's going to small businesses, or you know, that could have an impact on them. So, you know, do we have a figure for how long they're like? Are they 31 or 32 days, or are they 60 or 90? Or
we don't really have that information as precise as that. But an exercise can be carried out to find out what the length of time those days were for that period.
Yeah, which is a concern. Remember, so if they're only slipping a week, maybe you wouldn't be so concerned about it. But if they were slipping into a longer period, it'd be something you'd be concerned about.
I think it is important to note that, you know, quite often when we pay outside the 30 days, there's a reason for that. So sometimes we have to query the invoice, dispute the invoice with the suppliers. So there, we have, and all other councils struggle to actually define what is a disputed invoice, because within the target you can exclude those from your figures. So quite often, one of the things, from a control perspective, we are saying to our staff as well, you need to check your invoices thoroughly before you authorise them for payment. So in that checking procedure, if our staff are not content that the invoice does not reflect the goods they've received or is not for the amount for which they will query that, and that's what typically pushes it outside the 30-day period. That's a good cost control in itself, but actually goes against the prompt payment target. So there is, I suppose, a fine line between us putting in place good financial controls whereby we do a thorough check of invoices before we authorise them for payment and striving to achieve prompt payment of our suppliers. So there's quite often a rationale for why they've moved outside of that, but in some cases it can be something that we can speed up, and that's something that we've invested a lot of effort into trying to speed up that 30-day target.
Right, so just fair enough. And do you have to log those invoices as received then if they're not correct?
Our system automatically logs them for received. There's a lot of debate amongst the councils as to how you can actually strip out what is disputed from your figures. And I suppose in our case, we strip out some that are clearly disputed, but it's difficult to do, and that in itself creates a lot of admin time that doesn't help the prompt payment of our suppliers. So I don't think any of the councils have a system that sophisticatedly strips out the disputed.
Right, okay.
Okay, thanks for that, Councillor. Any other comments? Okay, so officers can maybe just take those comments on board. Thank you, and then we'll move on to item 6, which is fraud and whistleblowing, and Jared, you're going to take us through this one.
Thank you, Chair. So this is just an update from the last audit committee on fraud and whistleblowing. So there's been no new suspected fraud cases since the last committee, but there has been two new whistleblowing allegations since the June committee, and they are detailed in the appendix. Just briefly, one of the cases was in relation to the purchase of refuse vehicles, but a detailed investigation was carried out and there was no issues found. A live investigation is currently underway, and it's an allegation of irregularity in procurement in the Legacy Newry and Mourne Council, so it's still ongoing. Just to update you on governance training, which is going to be carried out, 8 training sessions have now been penciled in and planned at both Newry and Dunpatrick sites in October and November 17. So this training is going to be compulsory for all staff, and a training session is going to be video recorded for any staff who aren't able to attend. The training will focus on fraud and bribery, whistleblowing, conflict of interest, gifts and hospitality, and also the council's complaints procedures. So it has been arranged that a member of the SMT will introduce each of these training sessions to highlight the importance of openness and accountability within the council. Also, the NFA matches testing has now been completed. Nurian Warren Down had 31 high priority matches. These have all been investigated and no irregularities were found. A further 10% sample of the remaining matches was investigated in line with other councils and no issues were found. The matches focused on payroll and creditor payments and also on procurement and conflicts of interest. So if anybody has any questions.
Okay, members, any questions? Jared, was there any duplicate payments identified, or was it just
the matching report does highlight a number of duplicates, and I did find some that were duplicate on the system but weren't actually paid out twice, but it was before they hit the bank, but the account sale had, and it was like a two purchase orders were raised, or a check had was never cashed and then another check was raised, but no duplicates were actually made.
No.
They were caught before at the bank.
Right, that's good to be told that. Okay, members, so we'll move on to item 7, and that's direct award contracts. Tina, you get to see this one?
Chair, on page 30 there is a report on the direct award contracts or single tender actions, which are happen when partly or fully funded contracts over 5K is awarded to contractors or suppliers without a specific competition, or where there is a material change to an existing contract. In this quarter ended the 30th of June, there were 14 contracts by way of direct award, some of them, three of them under the 5,000 barrier. In the appendix that follows, we have listed out the 14 issues, and I don't intend to go through those line by line. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, Ken, thank you for that. Members, any questions?
Sure, just a quick one.
Are
the companies that are we're doing business with via the FTAs, are they aware that it's a single tender action? Or do they think they're uncompetitive?
Well, we don't have an outright conversation with the companies, but they're not asked to. They would probably know because they're not asked to take part in any competitive tendering exercise. They're not asked to submit a bid. They're not given a contract of award, so they probably should know because of the mechanism.
Yeah, well, it's always seems to be the danger that. You don't get best value for money, and you know, I look at one there, a control panel, and say Breeze Mount, the original suppliers of special equipment. But control panels are designed by someone, or the cheapest company makes it. It's hardly that specialist, you know. They're restricted that someone else couldn't do a repair to it.
Yeah.
Just something I would need to keep a control on. But maybe just easier to get the existing supplier to do it than to actually do anything else.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for that.
Chairman, sure, maybe just pick up on that. You know, the Constance Victoria lap, which is lap gates, which would be slightly different, but I can certainly ask Kevin Australian to give us back detail on that, but I imagine that's why, because it's a big amount of work. Yeah, but the other thing is was tied into the work. You realise we only did the work on Victoria lap last year. So, well, it must be now the defect, and maybe there's an issue in terms of the defect liability period or something on to it, something additionally we were adding to it, where I can find out about, you know. I'm just conscious, I'm just not, Victoria Lock isn't just like common for a facility we've got, it's totally unique, you know, in terms of that there, so that may be the reason for it, you know. But I think the best thing is I'll ask the person to do it, you know.
Yeah. If we can pick up, we've got the actual, there's quite a procedure behind signing off a direct award contract. There has to be a justification supplied. In the instance that you've asked about, Councillor Murnin, this was a control panel on the automatic gates at Victoria Lock that had been burnt out due to a high voltage input from the electricity source. the original suppliers. It was a specially made kit, and we went back to the original suppliers to get the replacement parts on the installation following that power outage. And they had approached NIE to see if NIE would admit any responsibility in the area and contribute, and NIE denied any involvement in it. But we ended up, the rationale given here is that the original suppliers were the only ones who could manufacture the replacement part of the kit that was required, and that was the reason for the direct award.
Okay, members. Just an observation from me in relation to it is good to get these. So I think this is an important item for the audit committee, and I think it is important that we do challenge the reasonings that are being provided, because it's in our interest to make sure that really that procurement is being followed, and a single tender action should only take place where there's a justification for it being single tender. And that's to ensure that really that where it is possible is that really that a procurement, a competition does take place, so we can be satisfied that the council is getting value for money, and that's something that audit will also be interested in. So looking on the face of it, we seem to be running about 15 per quarter, so about 60 single tender actions in the year. I don't know whether that's high or whether it would be deemed to be reasonable. But can I just maybe just ask that that management team, corporate management team, maybe just take this matter back and just to make sure that really that one of our officers are going down the route of a single tender action, that really it is single tender, so that there is a robust challenge, and it also is important that really that that's done before the single tender action, rather than maybe coming afterwards to say we did a single tender action because of this reason. There should be the opportunity to challenge it before the single tender action happens. Yeah. Okay, members. So we'll move on to item 8, and this is an update on the internal audit recommendations, and I think it's excluding procurement, Chair, even though the title says including.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Procurement will come later on in the agenda, so this is excluding the procurement. This is just an update on the 15-16 internal audit recommendations from ASM to show our progress in implementing the recommendations. So, at September 17, 29 have been fully implemented, 6 have been partially implemented, 1 hasn't been implemented, 1's no longer applicable, 1's not due for implementation, and then I have 4 there which are asterisks. They are in relation to the 2015-16 planning internal audit report. There's a new planning internal audit ongoing at the minute. The YSOP meeting was held last week, so we should probably have a draft in the next few weeks. And I spoke with the lead auditor who was doing that, and he has now merged these points into the same report, so these will be brought forward at the next committee meeting. In relation to the 16-17 recommendations, a lot of these recommendations won't have been due for implementation, and ASM having their follow-up review, so they're going to bring a report on the how many have been implemented in the December committee meeting. So I will, in the following committee, then I will bring an update on them. So.
Okay, Chair, thanks for that. Any comments, members? Chair, just to welcome, obviously, the progress being made on the implementation of the internal audit recommendations, and it's good this stage that that we're down to just one that has not been implemented at this stage, that is due for implementation. So that is good, and some that the audit committee would take good assurance from. So thanks for that. The next item 9, is the performance improvement, and Johnny, you're going to take us through this item.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Just for our information, Chair, this would have been considered and approved by the Strategy, Policy and Resources Committee at the last meeting in terms of the roles and responsibilities around performance management. But just for the benefit of members, it sets out our own self-assessment of performance against last year. Mm-hmm. And within that, it considers our progress against the important performance improvement objectives that we would have set out in last year's performance improvement plan. our performance against any statutory performance indicators and standards such as planning, waste, economic development, and also where we have any self-imposed indicators and standards, and I suppose they are broadly reflected by what's in our corporate plan. What I would say is, with the exception of the statutory-based indicators, a lot of the assessment is largely subjective because we're measuring progress against actions as opposed to outcomes, but that is something that we want to look at in terms of this organisation, which is developing many more sort of metric-based measures of performance. What I would say as well, Chair, is that it forms part of our statutory assessment. So this year, the Audit Office will, in addition to looking at a forward-looking assessment, use this evidence to actually assess whether we have actually made an improvement against what we said we had done in previous years. And that is the sort of direction of travel we'll see in the forthcoming years around our statutory duty there. It also considers our implementation of those recommendations or proposals for improvement, which would have been picked up in last year's audit letter by the Audit Office, and we are making significant progress in relation to that, so I mean, I hope that will be welcomed by the committee. The final note just to make is that we will be publishing this, putting this into the public domain before the 30th of September, which again is in accordance with our statutory requirements. Yeah. I'm happy to take any comments or questions. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks for that, Johnny. Any questions, members? Just to commend the report, again, a lot of greenings in it and upward arrows, which is good to see. Thanks for that, Johnny. Moving on to item 10, and this is an update on the self-assessment that was carried out round about this time last year, which I undertook on behalf of the members of the Audit Committee, where we did a self-assessment exercise, and out of that there was a number of recommendations for improvement. Dorina has prepared a report just to give us progress on how that all is going.
Thank you, Chair. I've appended to the back of this document the original report that the Chairman presented in December 2016, and we've tried to lay it out so that you can easily see that we've picked up each of the points raised, and by way of giving you an update on the areas where you had recommended we could enhance the Audit Committee. So just to run through very quickly for you, members, with relation to Principle 3 regarding skills, we now have a formal induction process in place for new members. We have an induction pack put together, one-to-one meeting then to talk through that, and invitation to the external training course on effective audit committees. We had one new member this year, and we have been through that process with that new member, and he will attend a future effective audit committees training course. The point around advising all parties with regard to membership was picked up by the Chief Executive in the preparation meetings that he held coming up to the annual AGM. The terms of reference, you'll be aware that you considered those in your December 16 meeting, and we will now, in a process following the internal audit review of the corporate governance procedure, they will be reviewed annually. A paper was brought to the Audit Committee then outlining the processes that we had in place for the preparation of this year's Statement of Accounts, and that was brought to your April meeting. Similarly, at the April meeting, in considering the extension of the internal audit contract, we did consider the adequacy of the work of internal audit. There's a point noted regarding the external audit fee, and that was presented to the committee in April 17 as part of the audit strategy document of the Northern Ireland Audit Office. We were requested then to produce a report on code of conduct for employees, and that's later on in your agenda today. And with regard to committee support, we have been endeavouring as far as possible to upload your papers on a timely basis. So subject to certain reviews which may be ongoing right up to the period of an audit committee. So that's really progress with regard to the self-assessment which you carried out as a committee. And hopefully that gives you some assurance that we are making some progress in trying to improve things in the area of the committee structure, and how it operates as aligned to best practice.
Okay, members, any questions, comments? I could just thank Drina for the report, and I'm encouraged by the progress that has been made, because these were areas that really that we'd identified which would improve the committee. So it's reassuring to see that really that all those actions are implemented at this point. Laura?
Yes, thank you. Chair, maybe just perhaps for you, can I request that the next date for the external training course then be notified? I know I was notified before and couldn't make it, but if someone wants to come up again, I'd appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for that, Councillor Devlin. And just to maybe just advise members as well, is that we will do a similar exercise for this year again, and the time to do that would be between now and the January Audit Committee meeting. So if members are content, if we adopt a similar approach to last year, is where I'm happy as the chair to take the lead and carry out a self-assessment. Now, I'm not sure whether I will use the National Audit Office, which is what I used last year. I might look to see if there's what other assessment tools are out there that we could use, just so we do another self-assessment exercise. And if members are happy, as I'm happy to take the lead in that and then share it with members. We can either meet or we can do it by email, and we'd aim obviously then to bring the results of that to the January Audit Committee meeting. Okay, so are members happy enough with that approach? Yeah, okay, thank you. So that brings us on then to item 11, which is an update on procurement. And Chair, you're taking this one.
Thank you, Chair. So at the last committee in June, it was agreed procurement would be a standing agenda item due to the limited progress in implementing 15-16 internal audit recommendations in purchasing, procurement and contract management. So a lot of work has been ongoing over the last number of months to help strengthen our control within the area and to put forward an action plan to implement internal audit recommendations. Following developments have been made so far. So the Assistant Director of Finance has been holding monthly meetings with the accounts payable and the purchasing unit to discuss progress and ways forward. A council-wide matrix has been put in place for purchase order requisitions and invoice approvals. This is currently live for the Corporate Services Director and results have been positive. So it is going to be rolled out to the other directors prior to Christmas. A new process has currently been put in place for recruitment of agency staff. A contract has been awarded to a supplier who specialises in recruiting agency staff. So this strengthens our controls in this area around recruitment and also in paying and approving invoices. And also ASM are completing a further review of purchasing, procurement and contract management in December 17, and the terms of references have been agreed with management. In addition to this, a recent working group has been set up to ensure our controls are strengthened. The working group consists of Director of Corporate Services, Assistant Director of Finance, and Assistant Director of State, the Purchasing Manager, and also the Audit Services Manager. The working group last met on the 18th of September 2017, and the meeting produced a number of actions, including a business case template to reduce the based on value, a template standard set of documents to be created, including invitation to quotes, terms and conditions, and post-project evaluations. Training is to be arranged for staff on the preparation of business cases, e-hub training, how to evaluate tenders and how to chair an evaluation panel, and also contract management. The contracts register is to be updated, and an exercise is to be carried out on payment and purchases to see who the council's top 10 suppliers are in line with payments, and also in line with who has raised the most purchase orders. So the working group will meet again in October.
Okay, Jared, thanks for that. Members, any comments, questions for Jared on procurement update? Could I maybe just comment in that it is disappointing that this audit, internal audit, actually took place in January 2016, and it is disappointing that really that more progress has been unable to be made to date. We are now obviously about to enter into another internal audit review, so I suppose at this stage it's probably better to just wait and let that internal audit take place, and that will give us an updated a view on where we are. I welcome the establishment of the working group. I do think that is necessary. I think this does need a focus. You know, procurement is a very important issue for the council, and I do think that this does need focus. And I say we do need to take whatever measures are needed, you know, to be able to lift this this function from limited assurance to satisfactory, and strengthen, you know, the number of weaknesses that were identified back in January 2016. This is already has also been mentioned in the report to those charged with governance, which is an item later on in the meeting. You know, so it has been picked up by both sets of auditors. I suppose, Karina, you know, the question that I would ask is there any resource issues in relation to procurement?
I suppose, not unlike other areas in council, Chairman, we haven't yet got our procurement team wholly in place, and that has, I suppose, slowed down to some extent progress in this area. There's been a lot of change of staff in that area. Now we've got two of the officers in post just within a matter of weeks ago, so we're hoping, and that's why really we formed the working group at that point. We're hoping now to try and drive forward in that area as quickly as we can, but I would acknowledge the comments that progress hasn't been as quick as we had hoped.
Okay, Adrena, thanks for that, and I suppose, members, if we keep this, well, this item's going to probably keep on the agenda anyway, because we're going to have an internal audit report. Christine, will this internal audit report be completed and reported to the January meeting? Is that your expectation?
Sure, you know, we will hope to have the fieldwork commenced at the start of December, so if we can get it closed out by Christmas, that will certainly be our aim, but
yeah.
It will be dependent on getting closed out and reported finished over Christmas.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think it would be important, you know, for the audit committee to receive that report to the January meeting, if it's possible, Dorina. So we will have procurement then on the agenda for our next meeting. Thanks for that. Any other questions, comments, members? No. So we'll move on then to item 12, which is the code of conduct for employees, and this is one of the items that we had identified as for improvement under the self-assessment process. And Dorina, are you taking this one, or
Jared's taking
this one? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. So the purpose of the paper is to provide audit committee with evidence that staff within the council know their responsibilities in relation to fraud, corruption, and declaring conflicts of interest. So the code of conduct for local government employees represents the minimum standards of behaviour expected from council employees. So a number of the key issues. In relation to fraud, the code states employees must be aware that it is a serious criminal offence for them to receive or give any gift, loan, fee, reward or advantage for doing or not doing anything showing favour or disfavour to any person in his or her official capacity. So this section of the code complements the revised council's anti-fraud policy and fraud response plan, which has been effective from the 1st of June 2017. In relation to whistleblowing, the code states if an employee becomes aware of activities which he or she believes to be illegal, improper, unethical or otherwise inconsistent with this code, the employee should report the matter. So this section of the code complements the revised council's whistleblowing policy, which has been effective from the 1st of June 2017. In relation to conflicts of interest, the code requires that employees regularly review their personal circumstances and take steps to deal with any potential conflicts of interest. So the council uses a combination of voluntary and mandatory disclosures in order to create a reasonable approach. Directors, assistant directors and heads of services are all required to complete mandatory declarations, and the council's head of legal administration has completed this for all posts filled so far. The next stage is rolling out mandatory declarations for those posts deemed high risk. This includes officers with enforcement powers responsible for planning decisions, procurement staff, and those responsible for evaluating any applications for funding. This phase has already begun and we've progressed as posts are filled throughout the structure. The final stage will be encouraging those not required to complete a mandatory declaration to complete a voluntary declaration. So, just on staff awareness, so any member of staff who has accepted a post within Yuri Mourne and Down District Council must sign a statement of main terms and conditions of employment, which states your continued employment is subject to adherence to the Code of Conduct for Local Government Employees, and the document is available from HR. Also, once in post, every new start has to attend a corporate induction where the Code of Conduct is highlighted within the presentation and each attendee is given a hard copy of the code. Also, as a new suite of new and revised policies has been rolled out, compulsory training has been scheduled for all staff in October and November at numerous sites across Newry and Downpatrick, as mentioned in the fraud update and the training that were jointly by the council and the audit office. Thanks.
Okay, Jared, thanks for that. Any comments, questions for Jared? If I could maybe just commend Jared for the report. It is important that that the audit committee does satisfy itself that really that there is a code of conduct for employees, and in particular that it does link to the fraud policy and to the whistleblowing policy and to the conflict of interest policies. And this report obviously gives us that assurance that that is happening. And I'm also encouraged that that the council is also investing in training, to raise awareness amongst all staff, so that all staff will fully understand what their responsibilities are when it comes to fraud and whistleblowing. And I'm also encouraged by the fact that really that once the training is complete, that going forward, that for new employees, that it'll be covered off as part of their induction. So again, just to thank the officers for the work done on the code of conduct and the awareness training on fraud and whistleblowing, etc. So, members, that takes us on to item 13, and. What I think what we'll do here is that if Ken gives us a presentation on the accounts, that we will leave the recommendation in that report until we have received Colette's report on the report of those charged with governance, which is dealing with the audit findings of the audit. So if Ken takes us through really the just a high level view. Ticks through high level on the accounts, and then we will move from that into closed business, and then when we come out of closed business, we will ask for then really for a recommendation for the accounts. So Ken, if you
thank
you go through the accounts.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to remind members that the at your last committee meeting on the 29th of June, we presented the accounts that were sent to the NIAO for audit. That audit is shortly to be concluded. At that meeting, we went through the balance sheet, which can be seen on page 125 of your reports. It is page 28 of the accounts. The fixed assets now total $156,750,000, and that has risen from $147,787,000 last year, and that's basically through the erection of the two new leisure centres, one in Uri and the other in Downpatrick. Long-term debtors has reduced from $690,000 to $604,000, and that basically is the long-term debtor that we have set up for the gas from Ocnagun. Short-term investments have, in inventories, the American word for stock, has moved from 350,000 to 410,000. Short-term debtors, i.e. debtors that will be paid within, that will pay us within 1 year, has moved from 6,363,000 to 5,369,000. There has been a big movement in cash and cash equivalents, which last year we ended with 12,946,000. That has reduced to 7,806,000. And the main reason for that is that we have financed the financing of capital projects. We haven't taken out loans, and we have spent our own money. There has been a change in categorisation from the accounts that we presented in June, where we have added 575,000 to assets held for sale, and that was the valuation of the Strangford Road premises, the bit down there, bit of land that we're selling to the education authorities, valued at 575,000. So that was removed from fixed assets and was transferred to assets held for sale. Bank overdraft has slightly reduced from 1,275,000 to 986,000. Short-term borrowing, there's been little movement in that. As similarly, short-term creditors, there has been little movement in the total of that category. Provisions, again, this is for holiday pay, is slightly reduced from 146,000 to 143,000. Within long-term liabilities, long-term provisions has reduced from 3,669,000 to 3,757,000. These are the provisions required for the two landfill sites that have now closed, Ocnagun and Drumnakelly. Long-term borrowing, as I was saying, the financing of our capital projects has mainly been through our cash and cash equivalents, and our long-term borrowing has not increased as significantly as one would have thought. Other long-term liabilities has moved from 22,790,000 to 34,019,000. This is the figure of the liability of our pensions liability, i.e. the difference between our assets and our liabilities. There's no effect on the overall balance sheet, as we also take it into non-usable reserves. But it's there really as a note as to what that liability is. But it is not financed through your reserves. The main reason for that large increase in liability was that there has been a significant change in the assumptions over the discount rate over the life of that paying out the pensions. The discount rate has reduced by 0.8%. And the CPI inflation assumption has increased from 0.2%. These figures
are given to us by an actuary, Aon Hewitt, who do quite a long-winded calculation in coming up with these figures. It is not an internally calculated figure from council. Going forward into the usable reserves. Usable reserves have increased from 8,489,000 to 10,164,000, as the general fund has increased from 7,234,000 to 8,909,000. The unusable reserves have moved from 63,395,000 to 52,711,000. Primarily due to that pension reserve movement of 12 million and the capital adjustment account, which is the where the depreciation levels lie, and that is the main reason for that decrease. So overall, the net worth of the council has moved from 71,885,000 to 62,875,000. Happy to take any questions.
Okay, Ken, thanks for that. Any questions, members, at this stage? For
just one minor one, Ken, and has there been an exercise done, or does it make sense? We use bank overdrafts, near £1 million, but yet we have cash or cash equivalents. I assume the cash equivalents are investments that we've made. That's how they return in more than what the overdraft is actually costing. Essentially, why do we use overdrafts when we've got reserves?
The overdraft is really, and it was there the previous year, was to deal with the account that we have for paying out salaries and wages, and that's only replenished on a monthly basis, and so that account is in in the red, and it's we have to show that particular account as short-term borrowing and as an overdraft. But technically, our overall cash is in the black.
Yes. Is there a cost involved in that then?
No.
No, it's not. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Members, I have a couple of questions. On page 149, Ken, which is page 5 of the Statement of Accounts, it refers to council operated a deficit budget in the year of $410,000 funded from the reserves. Could you explain what that is?
Yes, Chair, when we were preparing the estimates, we said that we would use £410,000 out of reserves to allow us to set the rate at the rate of 2.6% increase. When we actually produced the accounts, as you can see, the general fund increased from by 1.7 odd,
yeah.
So the reserves were not hit by the 410,000.
Okay,
but
so
that was one of the assumptions around the setting of the estimates.
Yes. So the council planned for a deficit budget, but it didn't materialise. It might be worth just making that more clear in that note. But that was the case, and the other question you've just answered, which was the next question, is that so the council did make a surplus for the year.
Yes.
And it'll be worth, I think it'll be worth also highlighting that the council has made a surplus. in the year, and that surplus is the difference between the general fund, which last year was 7.234 million, and it's now 8.909 million. So the surplus is roughly about 1.7 million. Is that correct?
That is correct, and yeah, that was primarily due to the change in the minimum revenue provision policy.
Yes, okay. So it's worth it certainly highlighting that, because again, and I am an accountant, it is very, very hard to pick these figures up from the accounts, you know, because the accounts are very, very technical. So for the lay person, and for me, it would be certainly useful to see that. That's where I would take my assurance from. So members, so Ken has taken us through the accounts. We still have to receive the report to those charged with governance, which we'll receive next. But before that, we have to go into closed business. And the next four items are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may by resolution be excluded during these items of business. So members, could I ask for a proposer and seconder to go into closed business? Propose Councillor Devlin, and second Councillor Moran. So thank you for that. Okay members, we're now back in open business again, on the proposal of Councillor Devlin and second by Councillor Moran, we're now back in open business, and just to advise that whenever we were in closed session, that we agreed to note the audit findings contained in the draft report to those charged with governance. We also noted the summary report for the internal audit reports, and we also noted two internal audit reports, one on asset management and the other one on community planning. Okay, members. Having considered the draft report to those charged with governance, can I now ask members for a proposer and seconder to approve the annual accounts, the annual financial statements for 2016-17. So, proposal by Councillor Moran and second by Councillor Brown. So, thanks for that, members. And also, as part of the approval of those accounts, we're also approving the annual governance statement. So, that will be part of that approval. So thanks for that. And then that takes us on to item 18, and this is the audit strategy for performance improvement. So Colette, you're going to take us through this one.
Yes, Chair. This document is issued as the audit strategy for the piece of work we carry out in respect of performance improvement. And it sort of follows on from the presentation given by Johnny earlier on. So we have a piece of work to look at performance improvement carried out by council. And this year it comes in two parts, really. Last year was the first year of piece of work, but this year we have we're into the second year of performance improvement. So the first piece of work we do is we look at the objectives that have been included and the targets that have been included by council for 17-18, and we look to see if they are following their statutory requirement and also if they are feasible objectives, and we report back on that. And the second part, which is new this year, is that we're actually looking back retrospectively at the achievement or otherwise of the 16-17 targets. So we will be reporting back on that as well. Our work is due to report back by the 30th of November. So certainly by the next audit committee in January, we'll be in a position to bring that report on that piece of work to you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that, Colette. Any questions, comments for Colette? So members happy enough to note item 18. And then item 19, Colette, that's the local government annual report for 2017.
Yes, members, this is the local government audit report required to issue a report every year. And this refers back to the first year of council, 15-16, and our work that was carried out. So for the first time, we actually issued this quite early in the year, and we hope that that will be of help to councils. You see, it contains quite a lot of information, and quite probably from the point of view of members, it's quite useful looking because it does actually benchmark performance some way across councils in that first year. We look at a number of things around, for example, the financial information running from expenditure, capital expenditure reserve levels, for example. And we also look at things like exit packages and agency staff and the quantum of agency staff used by councils. We also pick up on a number of issues around good governance, and we highlight various recommendations around good governance, which members might be interested in reading about as well. I suppose one of the things I would highlight is that the local government auditor has highlighted a focus on efficiency savings at page 15. And it really was a sort of preliminary sort of indication that she would like to look back at efficiency savings and how those are being demonstrated by councils in her future reports. So we would highlight that. So there is quite a number of pieces of information in that. Hopefully all of it will be useful, and certainly it's presented in graphs and that to be easily readable as well. So we commend that to committee.
Okay, members, any comments, questions on the annual report?
Yeah, just when you're talking about the efficiencies, will they be looking at and seeing what costs are like from the old model to the new model? As in, you know, how the former two councils are performing against our new super council, which is supposed to be saving us millions and millions of pounds.
I think actually the way we would probably do it, and I suppose I'm speaking without a huge amount of knowledge over this, but I think what we look at is what the efficiency savings that were planned by council in coming together and how those have actually realised, you know, as opposed to the old model. And, you know, so we're starting afresh really in terms of what council planned to achieve and what they actually did achieve.
Okay, thanks.
Can I remind the Northern Ireland Audit Office, if they're going down this way, we don't want to get into the point of benchmarking and measuring councils against councils, because it's not a straight matching apples with apples. You'll be absolutely pears and oranges and bananas and whatever else you want to match, because at this point in time, as you realise, Belfast didn't change all they're getting the benefit. Lisbon and Castlereagh came together and actually lost part of its area. Ards and North Down have two council offices within 1 mile of each other, and we have council offices within an hour's drive of each other in a big geographical area. So to try and do that, I'd also remind the audit office that, you know, we got a transfer of planning, which was an absolute disaster of a position, and in terms that didn't happen on the levels of staff transferred across, and also that you know, in terms of performance management, community planning were two new functions put into councils, which again was difficult. So I suppose sort of giving you Colette a lot of my ammunition in advance to try to argue that there wasn't efficiency savings on this amalgamation of councils bring efficiencies. People need to remember the context and the variables that are involved in this here. And I think that will be particularly hard to measure. So we don't want statements that councils didn't achieve efficiencies when in essence they did achieve efficiencies as well.
Okay, thanks for that, Liam. So any other questions, comments for Colette? Well, that brings the meeting to a close. So can I, any other business just before we close? No? That brings the meeting to a close, and can I thank everybody for their attendance and their contribution.